Hello there! This show contains material which a truly free society would neither fear nor suppress. The language and concepts contained herein will not cause eternal torment in the place where the guy with the horns and pointed stick conducts his business.
Hello, everyone.
What's up, my brother? I'm not going to do it again.
What's up, Chuck?
How's it going?
Let's up, Chuck. That's what we should be saying here, isn't it?
Let us all up, Chuck. Let us all up, Chuck, together.
Brothers and sisters. Friends and neighbors.
And everyone else.
Let us all up, Chuck.
It's a good voice for you.
Me?
You should do the whole show like that.
I should do I want to do the whole show in the puker radio voice. You know the puker voice?
I'm not sure that I do.
Coming now from YO5! You know the radio station kind of puker voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
That's totally you. You know, there's been this weird discussion on that little podcast, Usenet news group or whatever the heck it is, Yahoo group or whatever.
You mean
that
thing that keeps
to.
Filling up my trash can?
Exactly. And everybody's talking about how they do their own little. I don't even know what they call them, but you know, when you're listening to a radio station, every once in a while you'll hear WIBX, you know, or whatever their call letters.
It's not the station identification.
Yeah, station identification thing. And it's just like, why on a podcast? I mean, that, you know. I mean, it was kind of cool when the guys from Dr. Flexitone did a little something, but why exactly? Who that's listening to this podcast doesn't know we're bloodthirsty vegetarians?
Well, the whole reason for a radio station to do that is so that over time, if you're just tuning in and you're flipping through the dial, you know who you're listening to.
It's
a branding thing.
In addition to that, I think by law they have to at least like once an hour or something.
It's probably an FCC thing.
Yeah, I think it is, yeah. It got me thinking that we should do one that's really dorky.
We need to get like those harmonic voices in there too. You know, like 15 people in a chorus going bloodthirsty vegetarians. Kind of the Paul Schaefer thing.
The Paul Schaefer thing.
You know, in Late Night with David Letterman, Paul Schaefer would always do the intro to any segment and it would be really cheesy.
Yeah, he is the master.
Top 10 list.
Yeah, the top 10 list. He is the master of the cheese. He wrote a song once called Yeah.
Yeah.
And he just went, yeah. And the band played all this sort of out of key atonal stuff. And then, you know, he'd pull his fist down and it would just stop. And then what made me laugh, though, was a few weeks later, somebody must have printed him up like what looked like sheet music for Yeah. And then he held it up, you know, Yeah by Paul Schaefer. And it was like one note, you know, Yeah. I don't know. It was kind of funny.
Speaking of Paul Schaefer, this past week I was listening to an audiobook. I told you before that I do a commute about an hour each way every day.
And I thought you listened to podcasts on your commute.
I listen to podcasts. I listen to regular old talk radio and occasionally an audiobook. And this time I picked up, it was Live from New York. It's Saturday Night. It's a history of Saturday Night Live from the opening day, I think it was 75 to 2000 something.
You've had that for a while, right?
I've had it for a while, but
I
haven't picked it up and listened to it.
I remember seeing that in Studio A.
Studio A.
On your stained glass.
On my light table.
Light table, yeah. Your sort of like light bright thing. Actually, that's really all you're doing. You're just doing light bright, except it's sharper and more dangerous.
But I'm making my own pieces. Well, anyways. Well,
they're making their own light brights.
But it's not plastic.
No, it's sharper and more dangerous. That's the only difference.
And none of my stained glass stuff is backlit.
It is on the light bright table.
Well, when you're building it, you have to have the design backlit. Anyways, we
digress.
But it is.
When you put it in a window or something, it's backlit by nature. I mean, that's the whole point.
Okay, it's light bright. If it makes you happy.
Yeah.
I relent.
All right, fine. Now fly your flag at half mast and go in front of your loyal subjects and... Anyway, no. Wait
that's
a minute.
From that's, last show.
Oh, yeah.
So anyways, this Saturday Night Live, it's called Live from New York by Tom Shales. and this is great, that the format of the book is really interviews with all of the people involved with Saturday Night. And Paul Schaefer was involved from the very beginning as the
pianist
director
in the band.
He also helped write some of the skits, too.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. And it's funny because the way that this whole book is structured, it goes from interview to interview. It's almost like one of those VH1 stories. And the way
narrator.
Yeah, the way they did the...
narrator.
Humble. He's very humble. The way they did the audiobook version is that they had... of course, they're not going to have all of the real people do their voices. They're way too important and costly. So they had voice actors, typical people who read the audiobooks, but they had different people do different actors and producers and such. So it's really cool because you see some things that you never would have imagined. I mean, people hated Chevy Chase in the early days. It was really strange. And like I said, Paul Schaefer was involved in some of the writing of the skits. Chevy Chase came back and did some appearances. And
I'm Chevy Chase.
Yep.
And you're touching yourself.
Chevy Chase did some hosting. He did a lot of hosting gigs.
General Francisco, still dead,
still
whatever
dead.
His name was. I forgot.
And you learn a lot about Lorne Michaels. And one of the most...
Do you learn anything about Lorne Greene, though? That's like the perhaps the biggest question that's on my mind.
The thing that you learn about Lorne Greene is that he's still dead, and he's still not on the show, and he had nothing to do with SNL.
What about Hoss?
Who is that guy?
That's Dan Blocker.
Did he do anything else after that?
Well, he died. He died very shortly after the Bonanza went
Did
off
he?
The air. Yeah,
I didn't
cancer
know that.
Took him, actually. It's the curse of the Bonanza. They're all dead except the guy who wore black all the time and played Trapper John M.D. on that show in the 80s.
He's dead, too.
No, he's not.
He's not dead?
No, I made sure. I looked
Let's
him up
kill
on
him.
The internet. Okay, okay, then.
Let's complete that cycle.
That's right. The circuit is now... Oh, wait a minute. Never mind. All right, go ahead.
We're repeating ourselves. So anyways, this is a great thing. If you want to read the book, grab the book. It's great. But if the audiobook is interesting to listen to because it's almost like listening to these interviews interspersed. And I did learn that one of the most angry, bizarre people in the universe is, what's her name?
Lorne Greene.
Janeane Garofalo.
Actually, she strikes me as being a little inconsistent too, because I would hear her say things and then I would see some of the skits that she had writ. And they seemed to fly in the face of the politics that I normally see her display. So I was just like, what's going on with her? She seems a little schizophrenic.
The way that she comes off in this book is someone who needs lots and lots and lots and lots of counseling. Because a lot of people in this book, they basically say, Lorne Michaels, the producer of SNL, was a father figure. He was a tough kind of guy to work for. He had very, very high standards. He was a pompous person, but then again, if you look at all of what he's done, he can justify his arrogance. But on the other hand, they think that he's a creative person and they respect him, even though he's got a lot of faults. Janeane Garofalo just comes off as a person who is angry towards him.
I have one word to describe her.
Shrill.
And I'm not sure if I'm going to get it right.
She's a shrill harpy.
Bukak.
Bukak?
Wasn't that the... She was in an episode, her and...
The Sopranos?
Yeah, she was in the Sopranos episode, the one with that actor-director, Christopher, befriended them briefly.
Oh,
It's like second season. It's like going back. I can't think of his name, but there was a street scene between Janeane Garofalo and that sort of weird comedian, that sort of gay comedian, Sandra Bernhardt.
Right,
yeah.
Right. They played
and
cops.
They were dying on the street and they were missing a piece of dialogue, and then Christopher was on the set and he goes, just call her a something, and it's sort of like slang for the C word or something,
right.
I don't know, or lesbian or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she seems like she should spend many, many hours either heavily medicated or underneath a knife.
And in stark contrast to that, Janeane Garofalo, I hear her on Air America sometimes, that sort of more liberal radio network,
right.
That the other Saturday Night Live writer was on.
Al Franken.
Al Franken.
You hear a lot about him and from him in this book as well.
Yeah, and I hear her as a hostess. Host? Whatever.
Hostess is a Twinkie.
Yeah. Stewardess? No, flight attendant. You just can't get it right anymore.
Flight personnel.
Yeah. Well, no, I hear her as a host of one of the segments on there, and I've heard her interview pretty famous people like Noam Chomsky, guys who are on the left, and she seems right on. She asks great questions. She's a great hostess. She's wearing a little black dress and showing people to their tables.
Perhaps she has had that counseling.
Would you like to see the wine list?
The book came out, you know, a few years ago, obviously. But I don't know. She just, maybe they caught her at the wrong moment. She just seems like an angry person, and she can't get over the fact that it wasn't the experience that she expected.
Well, you know, things often aren't. I mean, especially when you become a cast member of Saturday Night Live, you look at all those classic episodes and skits from the original players, and you're like, this is going to be great. It's going to be just like that. And it would be so easy to get yourself, you know, worked up into this, how wonderful it's going to be, and then it doesn't end up being that wonderful, you know?
Yeah, well, and it always...
And that's just life. Guess what?
And it always bothers me when someone who's on...
Crack?
On Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Saturday Night Live.
I mean, you're talking about the largest or most prominent comedy platform in the United States, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, even though Second City was great, SNL still kind of rules.
Right, you know? SNL is like the Harvard of comedy. And this is a person complaining about having been on that staff and complaining about her situation. I'm like, you know what?
Red hot projector bulbs?
It's like a rich person complaining that, you know, their Ferrari doesn't sound the way it should.
Oh, I hate that.
I hate when that happens.
I stuck a kneading needle through my nipple and twisted it.
Like a B-52 or a B-29?
I hate it when that happens.
Lots of stuff. And you hear about how very surprising things, like Harry Shearer. Lots of people thought Harry Shearer was a jerk.
Well, he may be.
I mean, that's what's shocking to me, because I think some of his characters are hilarious.
He's very creative.
Absolutely.
I think all three of those guys, the Spinal Tap guys,
yep,
Chris Guest and Michael McKean and Harry Shearer, brilliant.
Yeah, so I think you would enjoy this, because there are a lot of people behind the
scenes.
And
when you say you mean...
When I'm pointing at you, I mean Rich.
You. Okay.
You in particular.
You don't mean female sheep.
I think you would... You guys... I think that everyone who has had any experience with SNL would enjoy this. But I think in particularly Rich would enjoy this, because I think there are a lot of stories from people that you don't even know about.
I'd love to hear it. What format is that?
It's on CD, obviously.
Well, lend it to me when you're done, and I'll listen to it in the car to and fro work.
I'll give it to you now.
To and fro.
I'll give it to you now. Stop recording.
Not,
let's
not
go.
Right now. Okay. After I leave.
After I...
Or before I leave, actually.
After you leave, I'll throw it at you.
After I leave would be kind of difficult.
Okay.
You want to jump into a tune?
Yeah, let's jump into Tunedge.
Do we have the numeric tune?
Yes, it is.
We have, all right, let's just let's roll with it.
Stay.
3 hottest numbers in rock and roll. That was their slogan. What can I say? You know, I'm not making that up.
Is that what they said?
They used to say the 3 hottest numbers in rock and roll. Yeah. I didn't pull that out of the sky. I mean, that was 805, and I talked about them in the past.
If it had a distinct kind of 80s-ish sound, it's for a reason.
Central New York's first and perhaps only band to ever be signed major label. That one was called Young Boys from their breakthrough CBS release, Stand in Line, which that wasn't actually the track from Stand in Line because or from that actual record because 805 won't give up the tapes.
Who's their label? Who was their label?
RCA.
Was it RCA?
Yeah, RCA was who signed them for that first record, Stand in Line. And, I mean, it sold a lot of units, but not enough for major label.
Unit.
I did. And I said a lot of units, actually. And great band. I really do love 805. They got together and played again back in 2003, and I saw them play out a couple times. They played at the Turning Stone. The rotating rock, as you call right. it. And they played out at a live venue down Good Old Summertime Festival down at the State Office Building. I saw him play that. So I got to hear all these tunes again live. It was Greg Briggs on drums, and it was not Eddie V on keyboards.
Gary.
It was not Gary Briggs. It was Greg Briggs on drums. Yeah. Greg played with them.
Oh,
Gary quit for a while, and Greg played drums with them for a while. They're brothers, great drummers. And Carl Goodhines was playing keyboards for the past few years with them. And I don't know if you know Carl, but he used to play with my friend Timmy G. Illis quite a lot. And just great players, great band, good songwriting. I love that analog synth. I just can't get enough analogs. Yeah. I love that sound. You just can't get that with digital, you know? So you came up with something.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny how things sort of come together.
Come together.
One of the things I was thinking about in this SNL book is that they had this period in the first 5 years, the original cast. You know, they had Chevy Chase in the first year, and then he left after the first year, and then Bill Murray came on. But they had greats like Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, or John Belushi,
Gilda Radner.
Yeah, Garrett Morris. All of these guys. And
baseball been very, very good to me.
Basically, yeah.
Chico Escuela.
They had a great cast. And then after the first 5 years, they sort of skyrocketed to the top. And then after the first 5 years, all of their contracts were sort of up. And then the cast disbanded. And even Lorne Michaels left.
Yeah, he left. And then you had that Tim Kazurinsky, Joe Piscopo era, which was another producer.
After. I mean, that was even
later. But that was not Lorne Michaels. That was another producer for a while, right?
There were two producers in between. One was Jean Dumanian, who was one of the executives, this woman, and everyone hated her, basically.
Whoa.
That's what they say. I'm not judging her. She's a very nice person, I'm sure. But and then after that, it was Dick Ebersol.
Ebersol, yeah.
Yeah, and he was a sports guy, and then Lorne Michaels came back. But anyways.
What about Lorne Green? Did he come back or not? Can you help me out?
Still nothing to do with the show.
Oh, jeez.
I'll keep you up to date on that. But during, I think, the Dick Ebersol sort of regime, one of the original writers, Michael O'Donohue, who's part of National Lampoon, he came back with a vengeance. I mean, he was...
That's like a movie.
His idea was to drive the show into
back
the ground.
With a vengeance. It's
really.
Like something like
in Clint, a world gone mad.
Clint Eastwood or Charlie Bronson would be in, you know? back with a vengeance.
You got that guy who does the announcing. I love that
Who's
guy.
On the Geico commercial.
In a world.
He starts everything in a world.
Yeah, well, they're writing something for him. It's not just him.
No, it's him.
It could be him.
He starts every sentence with "in a world."
Even if it's not written, he
He's
just
He's in a
does
restaurant.
It.
Someone's asking him, what would you like?
In a world where I'd like chicken and peas.
That's him. Anyways, this Michael O'Donohue came back, and there's this story that everyone recounts where he goes into the office, and he says, you know what this show needs? And he takes a can of spray paint, and he starts writing danger on the wall. It needs danger. That's what this show needs. It needs danger.
So are you going somewhere with
this? Yeah, the whole point of this is that we need danger.
Danger. So what you're saying is we need to be on Lost in Space so the robot can go, danger, Will Robinson.
Right. We need to be out on the edge there. We need to, instead of having everything scripted like we usually are.
Yeah. Where's the script?
You didn't get the script? No, I think
as actors would call it, the sides.
Sides?
Yeah, they refer to the script as the sides.
Oh, didn't know
I didn't get the sides yet.
Well, here's what we're going to have. Sideless.
What are we going to have?
We're going to do questions, and we're going to basically put each other on the spot and see how you react.
John fired off an email to me while I was furiously making lunch. You need to come up with 5 questions to ask me. And I was like, I don't have time for this.
And you know what Rich did? He didn't come up with 5 questions.
Until I got here and just had to like fire something off really quick.
In the spirit of danger, Rich put together 5 questions.
I did. And I guess since this is your meme thing.
You're taking no blame.
You can go first, and I will take no blame. I'm hearing silence. I'm not hearing your question.
How could you hear silence?
I don't know. What is the sound of one hand clapping?
It's the sound of me searching for the text file.
There it is.
There it is.
Tiny, all right. Tiny, tiny text.
I'm going to give you the first question. This is sort of like a curveball to get you in the spirit.
All right.
If someone gave you $5,000and said, you need to spend this money today or lose it, and I didn't want to make it like $5 million because that's one of those go on a binge. $5,000, what would you do with it in one day, immediately?
I mean, I can do what I want with it. I have
anything.
Complete discretion.
Of course, this is Fantasyland. You can do anything you want. You can roll it up and stuff it if you want.
Well, you know, there's these 2 new microphones I've been
cool.
Coveting. I've been ogling. I don't know. Is that a word?
You've been
fantasizing about.
Closing the bathroom door and
no. Well, you're the guy who was I wanted to drop a double entendre on you before. You said something about flying at half mast. And I said, "Does your flag always fly at half mast?" I mean, you know, they got a pill for that.
I've got 3 kids. I have nothing to worry about.
At this point, you're done.
That's right.
So I might spend it on a couple of KSM-44s, which I'm probably going to do anyway. But you know what I would probably do? I can't like put it in the savings. I have to spend it.
Got to spend it that day.
I'd probably throw it at my car loan or something. I don't know. Nothing really exciting.
You're living on the edge there, Rich.
Get a couple of microphones and throw the balance at my car loan. I don't know.
Like the microphones thing. You're thinking.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd buy peanut butter and roll around.
You know what I would definitely do? I'd buy a couple of cases of some of my favorite wines, too.
That's a good way to spend it.
That we have one. We're going to be drinking it soon. It's a Penfolds Shiraz Cabernet blend. It's the one you mistook for the blend a few weeks ago, but we're going to get to that, and it's fantastalicious. What?
What? When I was writing this question, the first thing I thought of was, I would probably buy $5,000 worth of silly putty and make a giant ball.
Wow. So is that it? We have to answer these questions too?
No, you don't have to.
Oh, okay. Because no. I got to be honest with everyone who's listening. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you.
Not me, though.
I didn't have a lot of time to formulate these questions. So
he's trying to cop out here. You see, he's weaseling out of it.
The quality of my questions might not be as high as John. So let me...
He doesn't even remember them. He wrote them 5 seconds ago and doesn't remember them.
No, I don't remember them, but I have 5 questions. And here is number 1, and this needs to be done in a particular tone of voice. Are you now, or have you ever been homosexual?
Is that the question?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Why are you asking me yes-no questions?
That's the only one that's yes-no, I think. Remember that from A Clockwork Orange?
Yes, you know? I love that question.
What is your... What is your religion? C of E, sir. Do you mean the Church of England? I don't know. I just love that guy. 644321 or 655321.
In that scene, it was great because he was like playing along with the whole game. You know, he was stripped down to his underwear and he was pretending to have like a good time in that interrogation room. It was great.
All right.
No, so, the answer is no.
Yeah, I guess I can say no to that too. Although I did watch the Brokeback Mountain the other day and I did like it. So I don't know. Does that get me in that club on any level or no?
No.
All right, good.
Good.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with it. Okay, question number 2.
Yes.
Do you think you could take a human life? And if so, under what conditions? And if not, what makes you think so?
Actually, I think the answer to that is yes. And I have a friend who's a policeman, and we've talked about this at length. Because one of the questions, I took the state trooper's exam. And there was a period in my life 15 years ago where I thought about, and I got like a 96 on it, not bragging. And they called me. I got the piece of mail one day that says report for your physical and psychological evaluation.
But you must kill someone on the first day.
That's part of it. And the funny thing is that came almost to the day, how many years? 10 after I took the test. And by that time, I had something else going on in my life. And I mean, if they called me a year later, I'd be a trooper right now. You know, if I pass the psychological and whatever evaluation. But anyway, one of the questions that they ask you during that psychological evaluation is, can you take a life if your job requires it. And my friend gave the answer that I had already formulated in my head when I was just thinking about this question in the abstract one day. If my life or the life of an innocent person was on the line, I think I could pull the trigger. Well, I probably wouldn't shoot to kill,
right,
but I could certainly defend myself or another person. And if it came down to my life or somebody else's, and I would pretty sure this is true for most humans, if it comes down to you or them, it ain't going to be you.
I think a lot of the biology will kick in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think most people in extreme circumstances could take a life, and I think I could too. It's something that I would probably regret and I'd feel bad about, and I might have to get some therapy or something. But
yeah, and it's for me, I think the only way that I can intellectualize killing someone is if my kids were threatened. So anyways.
Well, I'm sure there's some other people. I'm sure if Richard Simmons' life was in imminent danger, you could probably...
I might help at that.
Come on, that's funnier than you reacted. That's funny.
It was great in your head.
It looked good. And again, the quality of John's questions, much better than mine. Question number two. What's your favorite color? I actually was going to ask that. I thought about that. I'm not kidding either.
Living color.
And in the vein of that question, and we might have talked about this on a prior show, who is one of your heroes in the classic sense of the word hero? I don't want you to say your kids and all of the kind of stuff, but I mean somebody you looked up to is an astronaut, that kind of classic hero sense.
It would have to be the astronaut. I mean, it's a lame kind of pat answer, but I think it's the astronauts because I think these were intelligent guys, no matter what anyone will say to the contrary.
Well, they all have like degrees in engineering and astrophysics.
I know, but some people out there think that there are women out there more qualified. Anyways, intelligent guys.
Well, and there probably are women who are as qualified.
At the time. I can't imagine that. Anyways,
it's
I think
tough to believe, but
these are intelligent guys who also sort of risked their lives and did amazing physical feats as well as intellectual feats. And these guys, I think they uplifted the country and they also advanced science at the same time. So to me, they were sort of left and right brain kind of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I definitely looked up to the astronauts. And I mean, as I get older and more wise, hopefully, I look up to some thinkers now too, you know, pure thought, that kind
of thing. Oh,
sure. Yeah. All right. Anyway.
People like, you know, the Pope.
Yeah, he's right on my list.
Maybe not the current Pope, but I'm talking John Paul. He was
Polish.
He's up there on my list.
He's one of my gumbas. He's Polish.
He's one of your gumads.
Whatever. He's not one of those.
I don't know how you guys in Poland deal with these things.
Okay. I'll have to find out the slang word for that from one of my relatives.
He's a paisan. My question number three. Number three. If you were forced to eat only one thing for the rest of your life, what could you live with?
Another good question. And once again, just completely overpowering the quality of my questions. Well,
what's 2 + 2 is your next one. I know it.
Okay, let's say, for example, you need to qualify this for me. If I were to say pasta, do I get sauce or is it just the pasta?
When I say one thing, I mean
like a complete
one
dish.
It's not like I get to eat the entire range of different dishes with pasta. I'm talking
I say spaghetti, it would include the tomato sauce,
sure,
right? Yeah, I mean, it would be, I think I could live off rotini and high-quality marinara for the rest of my life. I love pasta. I love pasta. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. Actually, there was a Saturday Night Live character that was sort of a drunk woman who used to say, love it, love it. I don't know. And it was not related to John Lovitz, who is, by the way, another one of my favorite Saturday Night Live characters.
I'm in total agreement with you on this answer.
Pasta with sauce?
We agree. Okay. Yes.
All right. My question number three. Do you secretly want to be the host of Dirty Jobs? Because I just saw a book on your table that was called The World of Poo. And I'm not making that up.
I think it would be a blast to be the host of Dirty Jobs.
Isn't there a book on your table
I'm
right now?
I'm avoiding the answer to that
world
question.
Of Poo? There is. There is a book on John's table called The World of Poo.
This is when Rich says the world of poo, we're talking about poo, P-O-O-H, as in Winnie the Pooh.
Ah, it's still funny. Come on, give me that.
It was funny.
Yeah,
you put a smile in my.
What's that guy's name? Pants. Mike something, right?
The Mike host Rowe.
Mike Rowe. He is funny. He's got a good radio voice too. We ought to get him on the show.
Do you know why he's got a good voice?
Because he used to be a radio guy.
No.
Okay.
He used to sing baritone for the Baltimore Opera.
Oh, well, he's funny, too.
He's an operatic
guy. He'd be fun to have on the show. He'd fit right in.
He's great.
All right. What do you got, number four?
Yep. Number four, what is your favorite flavor combination, meaning two flavors that go well together?
You know the answer to that because we talked about it last week. It's peanut butter and chocolate.
And it's a classic. It's wonderful. Mine, you know. You can take a guess.
Well, I thought you admitted to liking peanut butter and
chocolate. I love peanut butter and chocolate.
But I'm not sure if that's your favorite.
It's not my favorite.
Your favorite flavor combination.
Because, and the reason why I thought of this is because there are so many different like pairings of flavors.
Well, based on your
work,
based on your normal behavior, I would say vodka and orange juice. I'm just, you know, vodka and vermouth. I don't know. It's a little unclear.
Rich is trying to insinuate that I'm a soaker. No. Cinnamon and apples.
They go so well together.
It's like they were made in heaven.
They were made to be together.
If you didn't believe in God before, eat cinnamon and apples, you're done.
That is a fabulous flavor combination. And outside of the circle of like really sweet stuff, like a peanut butter cup, that would be probably my second choice. Cinnamon and apples.
Wonderful
they're slamming. Okay, question number.
Come up with your number five, I think.
This is four. This is really lame. And it's, you know, are we going to.
In going with the rest of your question.
In keeping with the. But mine are funny at times. The last one was funny. You got to give me that.
It was good.
Are we going. It's another yes or no question. Because really, the last one was yes or no, too, you know. Actually, I rearranged the phrasing of my last question. Number three was really, why is there a book on your table called The World of Poo? Do you secretly want to be the host of Dirty Jobs? But either way, it could be answered yes or no. And now, unfortunately, this is another yes or no question. And this really sucks. So I got to
stop with the prequalification. Just say it.
So I'm going to go with question number five and try to, which is going to become number four, and try to think of a good one in the meantime.
So Rich is saying that he's going to ask the question,
and this needs
and
to
he's
be
not
done.
Going to listen to my answer.
This
and he's
needs
going to, be doing
to be done in the voice of a homosexual Austrian with a microphone.
Not that there's
why is bloodthirsty vegetarians about the individual?
It's so light.
Why is bloodthirsty vegetarians about everyone else?
Is that a serious question?
That's what I wrote. Yeah, why is BV about the individual there?
Rich is making reference to Bruno, another one of the characters. Sacha Baron Cohen, who does Ali G and Borat.
Yeah, that made a lot of top 10 lists too, Borat. I can't wait to rent that.
There are so many people saying that this isn't just a funny movie. It's one of those movies that changes the face of comedy.
He is such a good character. I mean, we overuse the phrase character actor. Peter Boyle, great character actor. Peter Boyle, just good actor. This guy is really a character actor because he specializes in over-the-top characters.
And from what I heard, it's not just like method acting where Robert De Niro puts on a whole bunch of pounds to play Al Capone. This is where he lives the part, and through the entire filming, from what I heard, he doesn't break character. He's Borat the entire time.
Well,
he even
classic.
Wears a dirty suit so that he smells like an Eastern European guy who doesn't bathe.
Well, that's classic method, though, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, for a comedian, it's not really heard of very much.
Well, maybe he studied method.
Maybe he's just a psycho.
Well, that could be, too. So
maybe he's crazy like a fox.
So are you up to question number four or five? You're four.
I didn't answer that question because I think it was just for comedic effect.
It was for comedic
okay, I'm up to
purpose.
Number five.
All right.
Name one thing that you treasure about your parents.
Wow.
Now suddenly we're in deep thought.
Well, one thing I thank them for, you know, and I could say the giving me life and all that crap, you know, but I'm not going to say.
That was a total waste.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. You know what they, even though it wasn't music that I liked to listen to, the house was always filled with music, you know, and I love music and I gravitate.
From what I remember, it's polka.
Well, they did, but yeah, I mean, I'm polka. What can I say? Like, no denying it, you know, I mean, but nonetheless. And I guess another thing was my dad kind of got me into the whole electronics kind of geeky hobby stuff because deep down he's a big geek too, and that's kind of, you know, the direction I went in, so that was important. And there's lots of areas that I don't value my parents for too, but you know that's another so
that wasn't the question.
That's another therapy session.
That's cool.
That reminds me of the Geico caveman commercial where the caveman finally says, "It's my mother. Let me put her on speakerphone."
Those are some of my favorite commercials of late.
Very funny.
Oh, someone woke up on the wrong side of the cave today.
The Rock.
The Rock, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was The Rock. Which so, was a very bad Sean Connery film.
So you need to get me in that question number five.
Are you going to answer number five or no? You're number five.
Am I going to answer it?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, you've been answering everyone else well, on your own.
I didn't think it was my turn to be therapized.
No,
what my parents, total acceptance. I think it's one thing that I love about them. No matter what happens, any problems in my life, I know they will always talk to me without judgment.
Hmm.
Something that I treasure.
That's something I can't claim. Well, your parents always judged me. His dad was my doctor, by the way, for the early years of my life. I didn't even know John, and I knew his dad first.
That's why it's something that I treasure, because, you know, for all their faults, I can always go to them.
Hmm. I have not come up with a good question number five. So here's what I propose. Let's listen to a song, and I'll do my best to think of a question.
You hit me with number five?
I'll do my best. That's all I can promise.
But I won't disturb you during the song.
All right, so let's check it out.
Daydream takes me to a place and time when I was younger and you were mine, to a memory of love that used to be, love that was you and me. Daydream took my heart around the bend. Surely this romance had to end. Once I was kissing, now I'm just missing. Now I'm just missing you. You were the one who gave me a song, held me in your arms all night long. Dreams of you come easy, but look what they do. Leave me feeling cold, alone and blue. Daydream leaves me for another. Sweet darkness falls upon my mind. Once I was kissing, now I'm just missing. Now I'm just missing you.
Kewl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was Robin Stein with Daydream.
She was just, I was daydreaming actually when I listened to that. I was trying to come up with a question and enjoying the song.
And you failed at both.
I enjoyed the song and failed at the question. I don't know. You know, put me on the spot, why don't you?
Okay, come up with a question. You've got 3 seconds. 2, 1.
I've failed you.
Okay. You know what? We'll save it for next time.
All right. Maybe I can come up with something in a week.
So tell me about your dealings with the evil draconian empire called MWPAI.org.
I saw a film that was described with two words that I've never seen put back together, actually, back to back, to describe a film before.
Stinky pants.
Romantic thriller.
I'm grasping at, I'm thinking Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. That was a romantic thriller.
Hmm.
Eh, it was more of a comedy.
Did they describe it that way?
I don't think so.
Romantic thriller, The Bridesmaid, French film. And like I forgot to do in the last show, I forgot to say what its rating was and all that stuff. And the director, and it's like, ooh, who made that film? Anyway, The Bridesmaid, directed by Claude Chabrol, 2004. Not rated. We're getting a lot of not rated films through months.
Not
and
yet
I like
rated.
It. Yeah, 111 minutes, subtitled, since it is spoken in French mostly. And this director...
Crazy why those French people keep making those films in French.
I know. And Claude Chabrol... And I'm not familiar with this director, but get this. I'm reading it right off of the sheet. Claude Chabrol, he's a 76-year-old director who's made 54 features.
Well, you know what? That's not unusual. If you go in and look at IMDb and you look at some of the foreign films or look at some of the foreign actors, you'll find millions of films that we've never heard of in the United
right.
States.
Well, it's like the Schmengis. They did an album a month, you know, speaking of polkas. And it was a romantic thriller, and it much like that film that the Stephen King, I'm your biggest fan,
you
Misery.
Cock-a-doodie.
Yeah, you cock-a-doodie Misery. I'm your biggest fan. Well, this film kind of explores the question or the phrase, I'll do anything for you, you are my whole life, when two people fall in love. And it's about an obsessive relationship between two people, a guy named Philippe, played by Benoit Magimel, and Senta, played by Laura Smet.
How do you spell that?
S-M-E-T.
Funny, it doesn't sound anything like Smet.
I know. And the film explores that phrase, I'll do anything for you, you are my whole life. This guy, Philippe, sort of lives the mundane life of an estimator for a construction company. Something like that. And he goes to his sister's wedding and meets the lovely Senta, who is the groom's cousin. And she kind of follows him home and takes her clothes off and they have sex. And then you know the rest of the story.
That's pretty much...
That's common. It happens to me every day.
And a very romantic way of describing their relationship. She comes home with him, takes her clothes off.
Well, there's actually not... It's not romantic in the sense that, you know...
Very clinical,
he picks
Rich.
Her up on a white horse and he carries her across the threshold or anything like that. But what makes the movie interesting is that how unusual Senta really is. She lives in this old, rickety house. You know, she lives in the basement. I mean, she's sort of like... Her realm, as she called it, and it's in such an unusual setting for a person to live in, actually. And another unusual thing about the house is that her aunt, I believe, who is a competition ballroom dancer, they're kind of the backdrop of the house, because anytime you leave the basement, they're always practicing dance. We never see them eat. We never see them talking or watching TV. They're just like always dancing 24/7, and that's kind of the backdrop to the parts of the film that are shot in Senta's house.
They're happy people. They're always dancing.
They are happy people. And this actually, there's quite a bit of tension in this film. And I actually can't speak about the film too much because I don't want to give too much away. But I'm not even sure where I'm going with this, because there's a lot going on in terms of drama, murder, and things like that.
Funny how you move to a happy comedy kind of dancing thing to murder.
Well, you know, again, exploring the question, I'll do anything for you, you are my whole life. And perhaps the most, for me, one of the most disturbing things about the relationship between Senta and Philippe is that it's really hard to tell where their love, if they have any, for one another begins, and their obsession for one another begins and ends as well. Sometimes it's hard to tell obsession from love and love from obsession, and this film kind of explores that dichotomy or whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean?
Sounds like Natural Born Killer. Remember that film?
I saw that.
Natural Born Killers.
Right.
With Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis.
Juliette Lewis, who I loved in Gilbert Grape.
And I thought Natural Born Killers was phenomenal.
I think most people did. I think that was reviewed typically very well.
I think it was reviewed well, but I don't think it was publicly accepted.
Yeah, but good music is hated by the masses, too, so what are you going to do?
You know? And that was one of those things where these people were obsessed with each other, and it was also a social commentary about the media, but... Yeah,
it was not a romantic thriller.
No, it was not a. It was not even romantic. It wasn't even remotely romantic. It was not even thrilling. It was kind of disturbing.
Well, this film was thrilling and disturbing, and I'm going to look for some more of this director's work. I think
from what I hear, he's got like 50 something films. Right?
I don't know, like 192. And another nice thing that's coming up at Munson is a Pedro Almodovar, the Spanish director. They're doing a little film fest coming up, so I'm looking forward to that. He's a great director. But anyway, check this film out, The Bridesmaid. I think you're going to like it. And if you kind of are into that sort of misery type of vibe, you'll definitely like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know what that means?
I don't know what that means.
I'm going to steal a line from Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers.
The car guys.
Yeah. You've just wasted another 45 minutes of your life listening to our show. 48 minutes.
49 or 50 by the time this is done.
You've been listening to Bloodthirsty Vegetarians.
Bloodthirsty Vegetarians?
That guy over there is Rich.
The guy with the funny sweater looks an awful lot like Wesley Crusher. John.
I look nothing like Wesley Crusher.
You act and look exactly like Will Wheaton.
Starting out throwing names around here. Anyways, check out our blog, www.bloodyveg.com.
Leave us email, feedback@bloodyveg.com.
Hit our forum with stuff.
Yeah, leave us some annoying commentary.
Bloodyveg.com/forum.
Yeah. And remember, you've been listening to the VIB.